Welcome to Legends of the Hall, the podcast centered around the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in Colorado Springs, telling the stories of the greatest stars in the history of Pro Rodeo. On today's show, we talk to the 8-time world champion bull rider, Donnie Gay, an inductee into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in 1979. This is professional rodeo announcer Steve Kenyon. Legends of the Hall is being sponsored by Wrangler, the official Western wear of Pro Rodeo. Long live Cowboys. In just a moment, 8X joins us. We'll talk to the great Donnie Gay.
Hey, y'all, this is Cody Johnson. When I was starting out in music, most every radio station and venue I went to told me no. At that point, you got two options: tuck tail and quit, or buckle down and fight. Well, I'm a fighter, not a quitter. And that's why I wear Wrangler jeans and shirts. Their toughness and style are legendary. They're an iconic symbol of the West, and there's no quit in them either. Life's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And if I'm going to enjoy the ride, I'm riding in Wrangler. Wrangler, long live Cowboys.
Legends of the Hall is being sponsored by M2 Ranch Jerky. Check out the new website, m2-ranch.com. Hi, everybody. This is Steve Kenyon. Legends of the Hall is all about the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame, its inductees, its stories, and some of the greatest talent in all of professional rodeo. May the 16th, please think about what's happening at the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. Carl Mecklenburg, a Denver Broncos standout defensive player, will be addressing the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame Spring Sports Fundraiser. You can find out all about tickets and more at ProRodeoHallOfFame.com. Donnie Gay is an 8-time world champion. He has made a lot of history in his life in professional rodeo, both as a bull rider and as an analyst of the sport of professional rodeo on television, on radio, and across the country for a lot of years. I had a chance to get Donnie Gay to give me some time to talk about his Hall of Fame career. Here's more with Donnie Gay. Welcome to the Legends of the Hall podcast, and there is no more legendary figure in pro rodeo than the man who's about to join us. He is the 8-time world champion bull rider, Donnie Gay, now part of the Frontier Rodeo Company. He joked with me at the NFR that he was now part of a company that was 9X in Frontier Rodeo, the 9-time stock contractor of the year. Donnie, I appreciate your time more than you'll ever know. Thank you. How are you? It's good to see you.
Well, doing as well as you can. You know, it's one day at a time anymore.
Yeah, tell me about it. You know, I'm going to say this up front, and I think I've said this a couple of times, and I think I've said it to you, Donnie. I never in my life thought I'd get to a point in the rodeo business where I could pick up the phone and dial up guys like Joe Beaver and Donnie Gay and, you know, Luke Branquino and so many legendary figures in the world of professional rodeo. It's kind of fun for a guy like me to be able to look around and see all the people I've had a chance to call friends. And Donnie, I think that's one of the biggest parts of this industry, isn't it? You look back to your career that started in the 1970s. The money's great. The gold buckles are wonderful, but there are a lot of people that cross into your lives as well.
Well, what you said is an understatement, Steve. The communications availabilities are unsurpassed. It's kind of like the money in all sports, not just rodeo. But, you know, the money's nice, you know, but the wins are what it's all about. And the tradition, I believe, trumps a lot of this new age stuff. I don't like to use the old back when they buck back in yesteryear, because they buck then, they buck now. Jim Scholer said it best. The only thing that changes in rodeo starts with an M and ends with a Y.
Yeah.
And that basically is the way the world works, because it's capitalism.
Yeah. You started your career in you were in high school, born and raised in Mesquite. I want to talk about the impact of Mesquite, Texas on your life. But you joined the PRCA. You were still in high school in 1972. There wasn't the 18-year-old rule that's in effect now, right?
Correct. I actually joined the association in 1970. I was a sophomore in high school.
Got it.
When I filled my permit. I split first and second in the bareback riding at Waco to fill my permit. And I rode the same horse on Saturday night that Harry Tompkins had ridden on Wednesday night. Hmm. And we split first and second in the bareback riding at Waco, Texas, at the what they call it, the Heart of Texas State Fair.
Wow. You know, think about – rattle off a few of those names, Donnie. You just mentioned Harry Tompkins. Your career overlapped Larry Mahan's. Your career – there were a lot of – some of the all-time greats that maybe the generations now don't know enough about were guys that you rodeoed with an event and against.
Well, yeah, you know, mostly, you know, people won't talk about bull riding, you know, where I won all my titles. But the thing, you know, starting at Mesquite in 1958, and I was only 5 years old, you know, my dad and Jim Shoulder started that rodeo. And so I was in the mix with Jim Shoulder's. I mean, he still was going to win another all-around world title in bull riding in 59. First NFR in Dallas, Texas. I was in the front row. You know, so I feel like I was a part of professional rodeo when I was, you know, 5, 6 years old.
Yeah. What was Jim Shoulders like, Donnie?
Had a, let's call it a real snarky personality. He was stoic when he needed to be, warm and funny when he wanted to be, but he was just all cowboy. I mean, he was like a second father to me. Huh. But I was in awe of him, and you know, he and my dad were like brothers.
Yeah. The impact of Mesquite, Texas on your life. I think Mesquite has been a bit, you were born in Mesquite, according to your Hall of Fame bio. Your dad started that legendary rodeo in Mesquite. The first time I ever remember watching you on TV, I swear I was watching a Mesquite telecast on the old TNN. Mesquite's been a big part of your life.
That was Mesquite. We had a 14-year run on TNN, the Nashville network, but it had also been televised on ESPN,
right,
before they got big and well known. We had to go to court to get them to quit running reruns, and so we finally got out of that. And TNN was, you know, it was a national network, and people watched it all over the world, and that was the biggest boon to our business. And, you know, that started in like 1978.
Yeah. The guys that competed there weren't necessarily all world champions, but they got to be pretty well known.
Well, they weren't all world champions every, you know, cause it started out every Saturday night, April through September, and then morphed into every Friday and Saturday night, April through September. And guys that were winning the world championships like Jim Shoulders and Harry Tompkins, Dickie Cox, Freddie Greer, two bull riders that went to the NFR multiple times. I think Dickie was reserve world champion 1 year, but Bob Wagner, four-time world champion. Everybody, you know, the road to the National Finals Rodeo, it went through Mesquite more than once because okay. If you were not at a rodeo, you could always get in at Mesquite. So you had 26 weeks to be able to go pull a check, and that's what those guys did. Gary LaFue's been there. Sean Davis has been there. You know, I'm growing up. I'm telling these guys, you know, what Blastoff does and what Tornado does, and the way they bucked before videos, you know. So I've just been a part of rodeo my entire life.
What was the old story about Walt Garrison, Donnie, the Dallas Cowboys football player and Hall of Famer and Western icon? He would sneak away from Cowboys practices. I forget how it went, but I mean, he was sneaking down to Mesquite and Bulldog and Steers during the football season, right? Or at least while practice was going on.
Season, and, he was steer wrestling at Mesquite, and somebody told on him. And Tom Landry and Clint Murchison, they lowered the boom on him. They told him, they said, you know, we know that you're going to rodeo in the off season. We're okay with that. You know, if you get hurt, we're not going to pay you.
There you go. That makes sense. Donnie Gay is joining us, and I don't want to spend all of this talking about, you know, what happened back in the day, but I do want to ask you about one bull ride in particular, Donnie. In 1977, you rode Oscar for, and you've been asked about this a million times, so forgive the repeat question. You rode Oscar for 97 points. That was unheard of back then, wasn't it?
It was completely unheard of. And you know, I actually, when I got the score, I was a little bit embarrassed, you know, because one judge marked me 47. And I know the judges' names, but I'm not going to mention them. Yeah. But one judge marked me 47, and the other one marked me 50.
Perfect.
And that's a perfect score. Well, in my mind, if rider and bull was perfect, you'd be in scriptures in the Bible.
Yeah.
So if the bull was perfect, you would think that he bucked his man off.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I never talk about that. You know, when I rode Oscar the first time in 1975, John Davis was the only one that had actually stayed on him for the full 8 seconds in 1974. This bull had been going to the NFR for 4 or 5 years already. I scored 88 on him in a must-win situation. My brother Pete had given Benny Binion a hot check in Las Vegas, and we had to have some money to cover that check. And I was 88 points on Oscar at Angels Camp, California. My brother, he forgot what rodeo he was at, but he won some money, and we wired it home. And then they wired it to Benny. And my daddy got on the phone and said, "Don't you ever do that again." He said, then he called me the day after y'all left town.
Wow. Wow. You know, those were up. How many millions of stories?
It was a better ride in Angels Camp than it was in San Francisco. I was 88 points at Angels Camp. And he bucked way harder.
I'll be darned.
Or it seemed like he bucked way harder there than he did in San Francisco.
I'll be darned. And San Francisco was the 97. So I once heard a very wise philosopher say, you know, sometimes it depends on the judge's opinion and which girl's prettier. I think that was you. You know, and I guess you just presented evidence of that right there.
Well, you know, I never put a lot of stock in worrying about, you know, 2 or 3 points either way. If I always, and it would bear it out if you kept records, and I was fairly sloppy at keeping records. You know, I thought I'd do this, you know, forever. But if you went to 100 rodeos that you competed at, the gifts on scores to win money, versus the times that you got stiffed, we'll use that term, would always even out. I mean, you know, if you got 2 really big gifts at rodeos, you know, they'd take it away from you somewhere else. So it always seemed to just even out. It's kind of like pass interference calls in the NFL. Yeah. You know, you think, how could they not call that, or how could they call that? And you play again next week.
Yeah, exactly. Donnie, I think you are one of the first rodeo athletes, one of the first really successful rodeo athletes to leverage that success in the arena. If what I'm about to say you disagree with, please tell me. And I know you won't hesitate, because you and I've had lots of conversations where I've been wrong. But I think you were one of the first really successful rodeo athletes to leverage that success in the arena into multiple other opportunities outside of the arena. Television, the videotapes that you sold for years and years, the what was it, the best wrecks and worst rides, or worst wrecks, however it went. You leveraged a lot of that success in those eight world titles into the rest of your life. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. Because there's life after bull riding. You know, it's like being a running back in the NFL. You better set the stage and be forward thinking, you know, because that old money runs out, and you wind up feeling like you're irrelevant. I was fortunate with the Mesquite Television to be able to stay really connected legitimately into my 40s, 50s, 60s to stay in the business. And I got that from Jim Shoulders and Larry Mahan. Jim Shoulders could have been... he could have done anything. I mean, you know, they gave him an oil well, for goodness sakes, for winning his seventh world title in the bull riding at the Dallas, Texas NFR. He won an oil well.
Wow. I didn't know that.
But Jim Shoulders would not go to the TV station to do an interview if he had bulls and broncs to feed. He'd be out in mud up to his knees, pouring out a sack of feed and petting his bucking horses, because that's what he loved. Mm-hmm. But Larry Mahan, he was the first guy, he started putting cool in rodeo. Prior to Mahan, it was plaid shirts, not talk much, let your actions speak for you, kind of genre. Mahan let his hair grow out a little bit, mm-hmm. Started madman shirts, you know, while looking for the times, and created his identity. I remember, and 1970, I was a sophomore in high school. My deal with my dad, I could go to rodeos as long as I didn't miss a day of school. So I had to go to the rodeo and get back. I remember I jumped in the airplane with Mahan in Dallas, and we flew to San Antonio. But just before we took off, he went to the payphone, put a quarter in there, got the operator, and got connected with the CBS, I believe, television station in San Antonio. Told him that had a scoop for him. San Antonio Rodeo was in full swing, and he had a national finals bucking horse and a national finals bull drawn, and was going to be flying in and would be at the airport, San Antonio International, and he'd be there at high noon. Hmm. And when we taxied up, they rolled out the red carpet to his airplane. We started stepping out onto the red carpet, and those big gigantic cameras that they used to have for television.
Yep.
They had it set up, and they had a director, and you know, and they did an interview with Mahan right there. I mean, we hadn't even unloaded our gear bags out of the airplane. Did an interview, and then gave us a ride to Joe Freeman Coliseum, where he won the bareback riding, but he won second in the bull riding.
Hmm. Did you win the bull riding?
He had a little kid with him.
Did you win the bull riding?
And he, I didn't win first. I won the go round.
Got it.
And we flew back to Dallas that night, got home a little after midnight, and made it to school the next morning.
Oh, be darned. Yeah. I, you know, people, you know, there were so many. I remember Larry's memorial service, and there were so many great stories told. His impact on professional rodeo in the 1970s, in a lot of ways, will never be duplicated, I don't think, will it?
Well, not duplicated. There's guys that are going to move, that are going to capture the spotlight. But it's awfully hard to capture the spotlight in today's environment because everybody's got a camera. Everybody's got a video stream. People have podcasts. These things weren't available in the 70s. And so when you saw Larry Mahan on live CBS noon news, you went and bought a ticket and went to the rodeo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's where you could see Larry Mahan in action.
Yeah. Donnie, this is none of my business, but I'm going to ask anyway. How many of those videotapes did you sell through the years? Any idea?
I was getting 1/3 of the profit from those videotapes. It was the best rides and worst wrecks at the Mesquite Rodeo. That was the name of the title. My best year, my commission was $90,000.
Wow.
And I think my worst year was like $35,000. And when we sold the television rights that we owned, and I say we, is Alan Reed Land Productions, that was doing the Mesquite Rodeo telecast. When they sold the PBR, their television rights back, we owned them in totality, in perpetuity. We sold them. Tom Teague put it together, and they bought Reed Land Sports out, and they also took my videotapes, erased my voice, and dubbed over them, and they continued to sell them.
I'll be darned.
So I didn't feel like I was treated very well by the PBR.
Yeah, wow. You know, but there were a lot of years there where those things were kind of a must-have for rodeo fans, I think.
Right. I've had people stay at my house, Blue Jeans to be, he and one of his bullfighting buddies was in my house, and they were staying in the guest room. In fact, this one, I heard some noise and some yeehawing going on, and I walked in, and they're watching videotapes in my house. It was kind of funny.
Oh. Yeah.
It was Blue Jeans and Cody Webster.
Well, there you go. Now I understand from Blue and Cody. Now I understand. Donnie, I know you've got a lot to do, and I don't want to keep you forever. But I want to ask you about, and I know how big a deal family has always been in your life, and how important your father, the late great Neil Gay, was. And you talked about Pete and your brother Jim, the Raptor G Rodeo Company now. Growing up in the Gay family with your dad, who I wish I would have had a chance to know better, that must have been an experience and a very long book all by itself.
Well, it really was. My dad was the at times a really good bad guy. He was stinking tough. His saying was, you don't halfway rob a bank. You either did or you didn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a good excuse, but it's still an excuse. And that basically personifies Neil Gay. He was not the biggest guy on the block, but when he was committed, nobody was going to move him off his lane at all.
I think of a trio of guys in that era: Neil Gay, Cotton Rosser, Harry Bold. Am I right in thinking that those three revolutionized a lot of what we did in the world of professional rodeo in their own way?
Yes. Leaving out, you left out Jim Shoulders.
I did.
And you left out Reg Kessler.
Yeah.
He was the Neil Gay north of the border. And he helped continue to propel Canadian rodeo as we were in the RCA, and those guys kept it going when you know the odds defied it, because there were no $100,000 contracts. There were no $100,000 bucking horses and bulls. They were $1,500, and you know, a 3-day $10,000 stock contract was a big payday. You had to string those together to be able to make a living, to make ranch payments, make feed bills. I always say, if you wear a cowboy hat, you're not getting paid enough money.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you started this interview by quoting Jim Shoulders, "The one thing that changes begins with M and ends with Y, money." I don't know what your career earnings were through the course of your career from the 70s to the mid 80s, but Kai Hamilton won almost $600,000 last year.
And I'll tell you what it was, just a little shy of 800,000.
Wow.
Winnings. And that's over, that was from 1970 to 1989.
Yeah. Wow. it would be hard for me to not sit down and just go round wins at the NFR and multiply them by whatever the round pays this year, just to see what it would have added up to, but that's me. I'm kind of a nerd. This year's bull riding race in Pro Rodeo, Donnie, to me, there's an interesting angle about it, and I don't know that it's been talked about a lot, and maybe I'm making too much of it, but over the last decade, three guys have won world titles: Sage Kimsey, Stetson Wright, Kai Hamilton. None of them are competing right now. Kai and Stetson might get back in the summer. I don't know what Stetson's recovery time's going to be. Kai's talking about maybe the 4th of July or a little bit sooner. Sage is focusing on the PBR. What impact does that have on the race for the rest of these guys as they get ready to try to go win a gold buckle?
Well, what everybody finds out is you're not ever indispensable. There will be someone replace those three guys if they don't get back in the saddle pretty soon. There's nothing wrong with that. It's like any other contact sport. I think rodeo mirrors golf. I don't call rodeo a sport. I call it a lifestyle because I rarely take my uniform off. But these guys, with the amount of money that there is to win, those three world champions that you mentioned, they can get back in contention very quick.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of money is staggering.
There is a history of – I have somebody at my door, as you might be able to hear from the dachshund in the background. There is a little bit of history, and there's a lot of precedent that's been set for if you can get back by mid-June, if you can get back by Reno, if you can get back by the 4th of July – you can still make the NFR, and with the money that's available at the NFR, you're not out of it by any matter of means.
No stretch of the imagination. When I graduated from high school and got the not missing a day of school restriction lifted from me, I graduated in 1972 at the end of May and was at my first NFR in December of 72 and wound up number 7 for the world title.
Wow. You were involved. I promise you, I was. Go ahead.
That was at $300 a lick. That's what my average was in the week, and I kept thinking if I can just keep winning, you know. So I was going to 5-6 rodeos every week.
Wow. I was doing some reading up before we did this because I didn't want to just talk about. I didn't want to ask about all the same stuff that you've been asked about 100 times in your life, but I did not know this. 1977, you were involved in a sudden death write-off. Was that one of the years that the average winner at the NFR basically, or the NFR champion was a world champion? Tell me about that.
They changed that rule in 1976. And I won there was two champions crowned those 3 years, and they were trying to get a long-term multi-day television event. And they thought this sudden death was just the cat's meow. They didn't ask me.
Yeah.
76, 77, 78, they changed back in 79 to Most Money One.
Yeah.
1976, with the first year, I just said, you know, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to be the world champion. And came down to the last performance, me and Randy Majors, and Majors had Oscar, and I had Red One. And I thought, well, if I can be over 90 points, Majors not over 87 points, and win third, if I won first at 90-plus points and Majors didn't win any more than third place and score over 87 points, I'd win the world championship. Well, I was 95, and Majors was 87. I won first. He won third. So I was the PRCA world champion, or PRCA champion, and the world champion by virtue of winning the national finals. And then in 1977, me and same guy, Randy Majors, we finished round number 10. I never kept that. You know, Paul Amos drives me crazy. Let's look at the stats. Well, I don't look at the stats. I look at, you know, what I can do.
Yeah.
And that's score points. And we wound up tied. We're me, Randy, and the judges are standing in the arena, and they said, y'all are tied. And I said, well, what's that mean? He said, well, we don't know. And I said, well, we're damn sure not going to flip for it.
Yeah.
I said, there's four bulls back there that they draw four bulls for re-rides in every performance. I said, let's just keep riding. And so we had the one and only ride off in pro rodeo history. Majors got on 67 of Jiggs Butler and Son, Jiggs and Benny, and bucked him off. And I had 11 of Dell Halls. I had won Fort Worth a go round on him earlier in the year, and he didn't buck. I mean, I would have probably, they didn't call out a score. I stayed on, but I was hung out to dry on the end of my arm when he finally turned back about 7 seconds.
Huh.
And made the whistle. And so I stayed on. Randy bucked off. I'm the world champion.
I'll be darned.
And then the next year, Butch Kirby won the national finals and the world championship. I won second. What I said was we have a great world champion, just not the right one.
Uh-huh.
And then they changed the rules back.
Yeah.
And I won it again in 79, 80, 81, and then subsequently 84.
Let me ask you before I let you go about the Frontier Rodeo Company today. You're a very important part of what happens with Frontier Rodeo. Heath Stewart, Jerry Nelson, the guys that, you know, you work with 9 times now, the Stock Contractor of the Year. That program, I don't know what y'all are doing right, Donnie, but you're doing a lot of things right.
Well, you know, like Jerry says, Heath Stewart deserves a lot of credit. For the Stock Contractor of the Year award that we've been very fortunate to be the recipient of 9 times. Our company obviously works hard, but the persona of our company is second to none. My dad asked me before he passed away, he said, what's the difference between Rafter G Rodeo, of which I live next door to them, and Frontier Rodeo. I'm the general manager of Frontier Rodeo Company and Jerry Nelson's Frontier Rodeo Company. And I said, Dad, whenever we get to a rodeo, everybody on the crew has got a smile on their face. And when we leave the rodeo to go to the next one, everybody has a smile on their face. And, you know, that's really difficult to do, and Heath Stewart has managed to put it together, have the best work environment that there is in the rodeo business.
Yeah. And I thank the world of Heath. I get to do a Frontier Rodeo this year. I'll be announcing the rodeo in Elko, Nevada, along with Scott Grover. So I get to do the very first Frontier Rodeo Company rodeo this year. I'm excited.
So we have a lot of good rodeos. We're raising some of the best bucking horses and bulls on the planet, and we expect more of the same. Whether you win Stock Contractor of the Year or not, you show up every performance.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it. Donnie Gay, it's always such a pleasure. Thank you for your legacy. Thank you for your history. Thank you for all the great memories. And most importantly, sir, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you somewhere soon.
Okay.
That's 8X, Donnie Gay, 1979, an inductee into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame and 8 times a world champion bull rider. Thank you for joining us for Legends of the Hall. Please like and subscribe to our programs. You can go to 8secondsmedia.com/podcast and find out more. God bless everybody. I'm Steve Kenyon. This is Legends of the Hall.